home of the stars, through the airwaves and on the big screen. Live from Hollywood, it's Rated LGBT Radio with your hosts, Garrett Miller and Rob Watson.
And you are listening to Rated LGBT Radio, and I'm Rob Watson. And are you there?
I am here, if you took me off mute. Hello.
I see. I'm technical difficulties. Trying to get the volume
up. I'm here,
up.
Rob.
There you are.
Do you hear me now?
I hear you now.
Well, there. Turn up your earphones. Good Lord. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm sweaty.
Well, that's kind of hot. I mean, in a blonde
Jesus temperature kind of way. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So tonight,
so what's
we're
exciting
to have on our guest, Eric Rhine. So far, we don't.
Okay.
But you know what? That's okay.
That is okay.
If he joins, we will talk some really fabulous stuff. He's a wonderful artist out of the East Village in New York, and has great legacy with AIDS artwork, memorial stuff that makes a point about the decimation to the visual artist community done by that disease. And he also has a legacy being the nephew of a gay pioneer, Lige Clark, who predated even Stonewall and was a huge publisher back in the day. He was, you know, very, very early on in our movement. But we may not talk about any of that. As
we
it turns
not.
Out. Yes. So what's going on
it
with
is
you?
Possible.
I saw some great Blonde Jesus stuff coming out.
I've got a new book, and we'll talk about that either tonight or some other time. That's equally fascinating. It's called The Blonde Jesusisms, and it is 10 stories that I wrote over the last – well, I really wrote it last year, but it took me, you know, 10 months to sit down and edit it. And then once I realized how easy it was to edit, I was like, why didn't I do this like 10 months ago? But that's a story for a different day. So the book is finally out, and I went up to Los Angeles today to my publisher's office and filmed a video. And so we did a bunch of fun stuff, and his person, you know, that edits all of his videos is going to put it together in something that's kind of fun, hip, and catchy. And then I'm going to do a book launch. And so even though it's technically out on Kindle and Amazon and Barnes & Noble and all that kind of stuff, it's going to be I'm doing an official launch probably in a couple of weeks. So I'm looking forward to that. That'll kick off the summer. And then I've got a new cologne out called The Eighth Day, you know, because I can offend anybody with, you know, saying I'm Blonde Jesus, you know, and I'm going to push it to the limit one more time. So I've come up with a signature cologne that I worked with a manufacturer on, and it's called The Eighth Day. But it's something that, you know, I finally got my bottle yesterday and put it on, and all I want to do is like sniff it all day long. So I'm really excited about that. And I'm trying to figure out with them what we can do as far as like bulk orders and things like that, so I can have another widget to sell, because I'm all about moving the merch. So that's kind of what I did today. So I raced in the door and saw your note, and I was like, oh, I can finally be on a Thursday, because, you know, I get like one day off a year. So. Yeah. Anyway.
Well, I'm actually very excited, and I really want to smell that cologne. You know, it's like, so while you're sweating, are you like dabbing it on so your sweat is like – Blonde Jesus, perfumey, wonderful.
Well, it's, you know, Blonde Jesus in a bottle. And if you really want to smell like a, you know, saintly rock star, you're going to get a bottle today. And, you know, da, 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 da. Anyway, I'll come up with a cute tagline. But it really does. When I sat down to formulate it, I came up with all of the things that I really, really liked out of traditional colognes for men, and came up with something that is also kind of unisex. So, you know, even the ladies can wear it if they wanted to do that. And it just has this... I really don't know how to describe it, because it has kind of a, there's a crispness to it. There's kind of a cinnamony, clovey scent to it, but there's just there's an umami effect of it that I was shocked at how well it came out. So If you, and also, you know, cause I haven't worn cologne in like 100 years, just, you know, cause you really can't wear cologne unless you're on a date or something. And I haven't been on a date in 100 years cause you can't wear it at work and you can't do that cause I'm allergic, you know, shut up. But I, you know, I wore it yesterday and I wore it today. And I was like, wow, this is really awesome. And the people that I, at the, my publisher's office were like, this smells really good. And I said, I know. Right. So anyway.
Now, okay. So I have to know, I mean, if you don't mind me digging in a little deeper on this, how does one come up with a cologne? How did you, I mean, it's a little bit different than sitting down writing a song and sitting down writing a book. I mean, I get how you do those. How did you do a cologne?
Yeah. But last year, I wanted to do a 7 signature scent called the 7 Forbidden Sins. And so, but I wanted to do it with all essential oils. And so I found somebody locally in Los Angeles that does essential oils. And they were able to, you know, they did it in candles. And so I thought, well, if you can do it in a candle, can you do it in other things? And they were like, we can totally do it in other things. Well, long story short, the main contact at the company decided that they wanted to go on to Crazy Town and get on the crazy train. And so after I'd formulated all of the scents and customized 7 completely distinct, separate scents, got the bottles, got the labels, and I'm, you know, like seconds away from getting ready to launch, he just went like kind of like nuts and went off the rails. And so I just kind of let some time pass and I reached back out and I said, so are you going to be normal ever? And, or have we just completely wasted my time for the last 4 months of getting this stuff formulated and never responded? And I went, ooh, well, that's, you know, not to be, you know, not to be all like, you know, thank you, God, but thank you, God. Cause I have another person that I know that ended up having something move forward with that individual. And he says, Garrett, it has been such a nightmare. So, you know, things happen for a specific reason. And I'm just grateful that, that did not move forward, because even though there were a couple of red flags, I went, you know, maybe I can overlook the red flags, because so I just kind of let it sit out there and go, you know, if I'm not going to do it with Crazy Train, then I need to figure out how to do this on my own. And so, with essential oils, I rounded up all the scents that I was going to use for the 7 forbidden sins and, you know, figured out, you know, and here's the thing though, I don't have the exact, you know, put this much in of this one, this much in of this one. I just knew that these were the things that I put in. And so I got all the stuff to like mix it, but you know, my day's been kind of on the super busy side. So doing anything that is going to take me time to have to sit down and be patient and, you know, methodical and write down every last little thing that I do, that's not something I have time for. And then probably about 3 or 4 weeks ago, I ran into this company that said, you know, they sent me some information and said, you know, we can actually do a custom scent for you if you're interested. And I'm like, well, that's really cool. It's not essential oils though. I went, well, you know, maybe I'll just give it a try and just see what is going to, you know, what can happen. So I wrote out all the things that I wanted to have it include. I gave some ideas about things that I've worn historically that I don't have, or, you know, that I just, well, cause I don't have it anymore, but I said, you know, these are things that I've worn in the past, but these are all the ingredients that I absolutely want to have in this. So I should be able to smell it at the beginning, middle and end of, you know, the scent cycle, if you will. And they put it together and sent it off to me. And I don't want to say I'm skeptical, because everything about what they were doing was like first class. And, but I was skeptical. And so when the bottle came, I opened it up and spread it. And I was like, they got it right. I can't believe it. You know, cause you know, sometimes you don't know, you know, cause it's like, it's a recipe. And sometimes when you make that recipe and you give it to somebody else to make, they fuck it up. And they did a brilliant job.
You know, it's funny because in Santa Cruz here, Santa Cruz is famous for having kind of all kind of eclectic kind of stores and ideas and shops and all that sort of stuff. You know, it's like it, especially during the .com boom area, people were retiring and then they were doing their dream shop. And some of them were very, very strange. But we did have one shop that was a create your own perfume shop. And you went up and she took you through these tables of the hierarchy of the different scents and oils. And she kind of talked about, you know, you use a little of this and this and, you know, and you base it with this and then you put these on top of it, blah, blah, blah. And you created your own scent. And then she would create how many things you wanted to pay for of it. And, you know, you could do it as a room deodorizer or whatever. It's funny. I went with my friend Barb, and you know, as Barb was making hers, the woman was coming over. And, oh dear. Oh, oh, that's wonderful. Oh, you're very good at this. She sniffed mine, kind of goes, okay. So obviously that was not my talent, but anyway. So I'm.
Well, you do have many talents, Rob. So you know, don't feel bad that you know designing a cologne is not one of them.
Yeah, making a good stink is not my, at least literally is not my good forte.
Okay. Okay. So what else has been going on in your world? It's been a hot minute since we've had a chance to talk. I think it's the last time we talked was when we did the show.
Oh, I know. And you know, there's more. Well, we'll go to me and then we'll go back to you because there's a lot more stuff of your going on that I want to dig into. But I'm actually have got a couple of things going on locally that are actually really exciting. I mean, I'm still doing everything national and I need you to inspire me with your book because I've threatened to write not one, but two books. And so far I have a chapter written in one of them and an outline done for the second one. So,
oh, come on, Rob.
Yeah. I'm in that, you know, I'm going to write a book mode. So we're moving forward on those, but locally, you are well familiar with, my show out in Santa Cruz on Saturday night, 7 PM. Well, I have a great co-host. He came on at the end of last year, Bash D. Eldon. And we go with this little tagline because, you know, his name is Bash and mine is Rob. And just coincidentally, they sound like you put them together and it's Rob and Bash, Bash and Rob. We are your radio mugging. And we steal your homophobia and your transphobia, and you will thank us in the morning. So
I love it. Well, you guys actually do make a great pair. I listen whenever I can on a Saturday night.
Oh,
it's a good show.
Yeah, we have a good time, and he's great. And Bash is he's actually kind of, as it turns out, I mean, I love him. He's you know, one of my best friends, but you know, he has this great legacy in Santa Cruz because. I mean, I say great, but because he went through some tough times, he was one of the first kids in Watsonville to come out in school. And when he came out, the school basically was trying to be supportive of him, but he was getting bullied and all sorts of things, and they really couldn't protect him. So they gave him a program [S2] Wow. [S1] To let him go to the local college, which is sort of, you know, a little bit of ostracizing. But you know he's never apologetic for coming out early, and but he also, unbeknownst to him, he inspired quite a few other people to come out. Those people have been recognized as trailblazers in the area. One of them called him an urban legend because you know he was the kid that came out and then kind of was siphoned off somewhere. So anyway, he's back and he's got a voice and he is a salon owner, wow. Hair salon, a very wonderful hair salon in downtown Santa Cruz. And the reason I'm kind of going circular on this is because it's coming up to something that we've got going. This Pride on June 4th, they have Santa Cruz Pride in, you'll never guess this, in Santa Cruz.
What? Santa Cruz Pride in Santa Cruz?
I know. What a concept. But out in Santa Cruz, namely me, will be taking over the main stage in Santa Cruz and doing out in Santa Cruz live on stage. So in between musical acts, I will be doing live interviews with the activists of the area. And, you know, so that's really fun and exciting. I'm doing it alone because Bash, while I'm doing that over in his salon, he has all his stylists ready and they are doing haircuts all day long. Every cent of the haircuts that they're charging full price, but every cent that they bring in on those haircuts is being put together for the Pajaro Valley Scholarship Foundation, which will give a scholarship to a young LGBT person in the same school system that Bash came out of. So there you go, circle on that one.
I love that.
Yeah, it's, you know, so we're real excited. And he's, we've got the stuff promoting his event, and you know, I'm working with the Pride Committee in Santa Cruz, and it's just, you know, we're really digging our heels in here locally.
Good for
you.
So, you know, you guys do great work.
Well, thank you. Yeah. No.
And why am I hearing an echo, by the way?
I don't know.
I'm hearing an echo. Anyway, that's okay.
Yeah. You're asking me like I'm the technical guy here. We're lucky. We're lucky we're on, quite frankly. So that's
it's a good thing you're pretty, Rob.
Yeah, I wish. Now, I have been inspired by you, though, on the health front. Although you're now in bakery goods, right? I mean, isn't that...
I'm in dairy. So I went from slinging my meat to making whipped cream dreams.
Well, I've been doing non-fat milk, but I have been working out, and I've been eating a la Garrett Miller, I mean, with the veggies and all that stuff. And
how you feeling?
I feel fantastic, actually. And I'm, you know, I've got muscles, and, you know, it's like, you know, so it's been really cool. So they're, you know.
Good for you. That's awesome.
You know, you influenced me in a lot of ways, so.
Oh, no. But, you poor thing.
Hey, well, don't worry. I'm not going to make an album. That part, I leave just
you.
You
could.
Yeah, well, I don't know about that.
I can do it. Anybody can do it. Trust me.
No, I don't. You know,
there's enough auto-tune out there for everybody.
Yeah, I think if I tried, you would go, you know, I thought anybody could do that, but.
Trust me, I'm not kidding. If you heard the first time I sang and my producer, you know, said, well, you know, I've worked with worse, you know, bless his heart, I will tell you that. You know, that was all I needed. I just needed a little push off the, you know, push off the sidewalk, per se. But I will tell you, I sounded horrible. And it was only when we got ready to go do the second album, he says, you know, maybe you want to go get some singing lessons. And I went, oh, that sounds like fun. Let's go do that. And, you know, once I did that, then it was, you know, it was all downhill.
Well, not really, because that's the other part I want to ask you about. I mean, last we talked, you were on your way to an award ceremony, plus
which I did not win.
I know. I figured there was, you know, we would have heard differently had you know, you should have won. I mean,
exactly.
You had so many number ones in the independent charts. I mean, it's like, it's mind blowing. So, you know, how is all that going?
Well, I'm still number one in California, and I don't know how this – honestly, I don't know really how it works. So I'm just like, okay, that's really cool. This week on numberonemusic.com, my song Gay Wedding is number one again for the millionth week in a row or something like that in pop for the state of California. I'm like number two nationally. So I'm like, okay, that's really cool. But again, don't really understand how that works because I stopped trying to do any promotion for the album after Blonde Jesus kind of ran its course. And then the next thing I know, Gay Wedding is getting requests again. So I just figured it was like springtime or something. And then people decided they wanted to, you know, hear the song. And then, you know, there we go.
Yeah.
So long story short, it's going very well. But I, you know, I don't really see there's no money involved in this. So that's why, of course, I have a J-O-B. So it's great that I've been number one for 7 trillion weeks in a row. It's great that, you know, I've got a lot of people every week that call in and request it or request it online and all of that. But it doesn't pay the rent. Grateful for it because I have so much fun, you know, getting feedback and people going, oh my God. I'm like, okay, that's awesome. You know, so we'll see. You know, I'm excited for all the new things that I'm working on, like the book, because, you know, I can actually, you know, make some money on that one.
Right.
So we'll see how it's all going to go. So, you know, we'll see.
On the book, what is the nature of the content of it? I mean,
it's called the Blonde Jesusisms because I'm trying to find any way to use the term Blonde Jesus in a way that some people will find, oh my God, I can't believe he's used that term. Who does he think he is? I don't think I'm Jesus, for goodness sakes, you know, give me a break. So the book is called Blonde Jesusisms. Because I figured, you know, that'd be, you know, highly controversial if it ever gets picked up anywhere, like on Ellen. What, you know, what are you doing? And, you know, everybody's leaving here with their own copy. And then they'll throw them at me or something like that. But after the show's over, of course, they'll want to get it autographed and take it home. But it's right. 10 stories, each or 10 chapters, and each chapter has a fortuitous fable and a palpable parable. And the fortuitous fable is a story that is fictional, but it is something that, you know, everybody can relate to, or at least I hope so, in, you know, situations that happen in life and people that we can recognize and, you know, why, you know, certain things are a certain way. And then the palpable parable, and I don't know why, I don't even know if those words, you know, are appropriate. I just said, oh, I just like, you know, a fortuitous fable. I thought that just kind of like goes together. So I'm going to say that. And then, you know, palpable parable, same thing. You know, I don't know if it's appropriate, but that's what I use.
Okay.
If it works for you and you're a wordsmith, I'll take it.
Yeah,
the palpable parable. And so I wrote a story that is a personal story for the second half of the chapter. And so the second half of that, the palpable parable, will recount a story that actually happened to me. And I just share, you know, it's kind of like those situational interviews. Describe a time when, what did you do, and what's the outcome? So that's kind of how the chapters go. But there's stories that I wanted to tell. And unlike, I think, a lot of folks who may go through certain gyrations with publishers or editors or things like that, I just said, these are the stories I'm going to tell. I'm going to tell them in my voice, my way. And so I did have an editor go through the book and make suggestions to me, some of which I took to heart. And some of them said, nope, I'm going to just leave it the way it is because this is how I want it to sound. And if people read the book and it either A, doesn't make sense, it will make sense. But if it doesn't make sense to them, that's fine. I can't please everybody all the time, even though I want to desperately. But I hope people who have heard my voice and know how I speak will read the book and get huge chuckles out of it or know where the tone comes from when they read the book. And I did that on purpose because when I got ready to sit down and write this style of book, the person that influenced me heavily, his name is Derek Hartley from Sirius XM radio, and he was on the OutQ station forever and ever until, you know, Sirius decided they wanted to be stupid and fired, you know, the whole station.
Right.
And Derek, several years ago, wrote two books. And he just wrote stuff that happened to him in life, you know, just everyday musings. And they put them together and then, you know, had them published. And when I heard about it on their show, the Derek and Romaine show, DNR 2.0, you can go to DerekandRomaine.com and sign up today for their show. And it's fantastic. I wrote to Derek and I said, Derek, I'll buy your book, but you have to autograph it to my favorite BFF in Huntington Beach. And he goes, fine. I don't have a problem with that, you know, because he wanted to sell two books. So he sold two books, sent them to me. And I sat down and, you know, was delighted when he actually did you know, inscribe them to me that way. But I sat down and read the books and was just peeing my pants laughing so hard because reading his books, if you just read it, and didn't understand the tone or the voice or the context of how it comes across, you'd be like, well, okay, who cares? But his stories, because I heard him on the radio,
right.
I know his personality. I was like, oh my God, this is the funniest thing ever. And so his books were hugely enjoyable to me. And so I said, that's what I want to do.
Well, you know,
that's what I did.
Thinking, though, your material that you've written is actually, for me personally, very inspiring. I mean, I can list a number of the songs that you've written that I listen to all the time, you know, for their musical worth, but also they put me in a really good place spiritually. I mean, they just, you know, they connect with me. It's the Fog, I Am, Blonde Jesus, and Eyes Wide. I mean, all four of those, whenever I hear any one of them, you know, it's like they really touch me. I mean, the other songs too, I feel like I'm talking about some of your children, not the other ones, but the other ones I love as well, but those four, it's like, it's like a little prayer session, you know, it's like a reminder. And, you know, Fog, especially when you explain that one to me, you know, because I love the song, and then you gave me kind of that little added, you know what Fog stands for.
Bonus.
Yeah. And you know, that sent me into a whole new place with it. But
thanks.
You know, so I'm kind of anxious to see what of the philosophical Garrett Miller kind of weaved into the book.
Well, I mean, a lot of it has to do with, you know, your attitude towards things. And, you know, I've got one chapter, to be quite honest, I'm a little snarky on, but I don't really care because it's my story and I'm sticking to it. But a lot of times, you know, I write in here that the blonde Jesusisms really are about how winners approach life and what winners do, what winners don't do, and the, you know, the things that I see in my experience, you know. And I think that is really where, you know, what it boils down to is that, you know, I want to talk about what I think winners are in my experience and who I see winners to be. And that doesn't mean that you've won an election or number one on a music chart or whatever. It's more an attitudinal thing in, you know, how you approach life, you know. And one of the things that I talk about in the book is like winners, you know, they're not snake oil salespeople that want to keep people down below a living wage. They're not people who put others down or cheat or try to get away with things. They're people who lift others up. And,
right.
You know, it's really an attitude of servitude. You know, how can I help you, Rob? And how can I do something to make your life better? I think that makes, you know, that person a winner. They're there to help, you know, others, because that will always come back to you tenfold. It might not be today, but it will always come back to you. So, you know, you get 10 little stories that I've come up with. There are 10 chapters. And at the end of the day, hopefully you'll have some smiles. You might have a tear or two. But you know, they're what I wanted to tell, and I've already started on book 2 and 3. And so we'll see how quickly we can get that out, but it's inspired me to, you know, continue going on. And, you know, once we get it launched and actually it's, you know, out in the world and people have it in their hands, you know, we'll see what kind of reception I get with it. Hopefully it's a very good one, because I love telling stories, but, you know, it'll be in the hands of the public. So I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, I'm very, very excited. You know, I want to dab the perfume, listen to the music, and read the book all at the same time. Just, you know, have a full on
excellent thing for you to do.
Multi-sensory experience. But
exactly.
Well, so, you know, just to get my little, you know, momentum going, because I figure if I tell enough people about this, that, you know, it'll put enough pressure on me. So the two books I'm working on, one is, won't be a big surprise. It's kind of a mixed anthology of, you know, all the things I've written before in kind of a more sort of a historical background of, you know, what the path to marriage equality was like, you know, from the perspective of a gay dad and being vocal out that about it, you know, as everything was happening. And, and in fact, there was one key article in there that I actually think had some historical significance in that whole process. So that'll be kind of featured in that. So that'll be a little bit sort of memoir, autobiographical, anthology kind of a book. But as I mentioned, my co-host Bash has a salon, and one of his actually the previous owner of it, they do these art shows in the salon. And one of the art shows, I went in and I was helping him out, and I noticed this artist's work. And I was so blown away by it. They were kind of dark but whimsical. And they were all kind of these kind of charcoal type pencil style art drawings. And they were kind of very odd, weird characters in these pictures. And it turns out it was Scott, who was one of the previous owners, was actually the artist. So I went up to him and I said, Scott, you know, these are fantastic. I love them. They've just got my head going. Have you ever considered, you know, like being an illustrator for a book? And he said, oh, I would love that. I've never met anybody who wanted to do that, but, you know, that's exactly what I want to do. And I said, well, I write, and I've never found, you know, an artist that wanted to do that. And so I wrote a 5-page treatment of the book, showed it to him. He loved it. And now I've got one chapter written and we're off and running, and it's going to be his art and my words. And it's a,
how quickly are you going to be able to get that done? I want to buy a copy now.
I'm excited. I want to read it too. So, but,
well, hurry up.
I know. It's in my head. It really is, because it's kind of a, I don't want to pin it because it's not exactly like this, but I would say it'll be in the Harry Potter esque type genre. You know,
that's, oh my gosh,
that space. So
well, that will be fun.
Yeah, and it's just his art just got my creative juices going, and when I wrote down what I did, he got more art ideas, and you know, he's running in, kind of showing me these sketches. Like, what do you think of these? And I'm kind of going, Scott, I'm being inspired by you. So anything you show me is going to be right, because it's, you know, but it's just that creative process is very exciting, you know, to go back and forth with somebody.
Well, isn't it nice to be able to work with somebody though? Because I think, you know, it's the collaborative process for me that I really enjoy, especially when, you know, you're both on the same page and it's like, look what I did. And then, you know, as a complementary aspect to what you're doing, they're doing something else. You know, from a music standpoint, I write the lyrics. My producer, Brian, had done the music production and come up with the music. And then, you know, together we'd create songs. And I'm like, you know, and every time I go in, I'd be like, oh my gosh. So, you know, doing these chapters, I bet for him, I bet he's just going like, holy cow, this is exactly what I want. And then vice versa with the drawings and oh my goodness.
Yeah, no, it's just a lot of fun. And it's neat when you have you come together, but it's not like an overlap. It's like we're not like two illustrators or two writers. So there's no point where we're kind of going, oh, don't write it that way, you know, do it this, it, because he's got his area and I've got mine. And it's like,
right.
So we'll, yeah. So it just feels very, you know, collaborative, but building on each other. So I'm very excited about, you know, getting that going in that direction. So that will be fun. But,
I am
yeah.
proud of you, Rob.
I know. Well, don't be proud of me yet. Right now I'm more in the slacker zone, because by this point of the year, I really wanted more done on each of them. So me talking about it right now is kind of a lighting my own fire to put my words
over
my mouth.
Come on, baby, light your fire. Let's do it.
So, yes. So you had some dance stuff that was in the works. How's that going?
Dance stuff?
Oh, maybe not. Maybe I imagined.
I'm trying to remember.
Wasn't there like going to be a dance version of? I thought you had a whole series coming out.
A remix project.
Yeah, I know the remix, but didn't you have a next project that was kind of penciled
out? Well,
if maybe
somebody
not.
Would like to write me a check that will pay for my studio and production time, I have a whole album of new disco material that I can't wait to record. But you know, magically, people don't want to work for free except for me, apparently. So, you know, once I can save enough shekels this year to go back into the studio, we'll have some brand new material to record. And it's really fun and it's awesome. It's, you know, nobody does a full length album anymore, but I just have it in my head that I want to do 10 more songs. We're going to do 10 more songs that are disco. And it's just, you know, I can't wait to do it. I just don't have any money. So if somebody out there has a nice big fat checkbook, I am willing and able to credit you as an executive producer on the album, and I will give you mad props. So just send me a $50,000 in care of.
There you go. Okay. Well, when one of my books takes off and is this huge hit, and I sign the contract for the Hollywood production, then I'll have money to play with. So
there we go. Well, let's do it.
I know, really. So we haven't talked about any of the current events at all. I mean, for
there's
like
a lot, aren't there?
Months and months. What are you thinking these days? Everything on the government and everything that's going on there. I mean, are you following
I don't have TV, so I follow it by watching the unbiased. You know, from either angle, the unbiased opinions that people post on Facebook and or CNN.com or Yahoo or Huffington Post that are nonpartisan in all categories. I don't know. I just think, you know, there's so much going on. Honestly, I think that, you know, we have put a system in place, and everybody can bitch and moan and not like it and whatever. But you know what, folks? And this is where I'm not going to be very popular or liked. And I don't really care. There were over 50% of our country that did not get their ass off the fucking couch to go out and vote this last time. And 25% of America voted our current system in. 25% voted for the other candidate.
Right.
50%
well,
didn't get off the couch and vote. So,
yeah, I mean, I agree with you because we have to deal with the system we have. However,
yes.
The thing that frosts my cookie is that, you know, our system is based on something they set up literally in the old days. I mean, we're talking
yes.
about the, you know, we have to count everything by hand. You know, it's like, you know, we're, you know, tossing marbles, you know, that type of thing. So they came up with the Electoral College. And the Electoral College, when they came up with it, because at that point they had slavery and the Southern states. And so the Southern states were kind of like waving their hands going, "Whoa, wait, we have so many people here who aren't real people. You know, we have people here that aren't real citizens. You know, so we want credit, you know, for the voters of our state." And so they got kind of weighted in terms of their value in the Electoral College. So anyway, bottom line is we've had two elections now where the Electoral College has shown its age badly, where it has.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I completely agree.
Yeah. Cause you know, to your point, you know, to 50% of the, or, you know, 50% of the people didn't vote, which I agree is a travesty. And even some of the ones who did, in my opinion, didn't vote in a way that was very forward-thinking at all. They were very almost vindictive about it.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is, that all aside, excuse me, California votes came out weighing less than other states' votes. Is the bottom line. So your vote and my vote did not count, literally did not count.
You know, that's all very unfortunate, and it's all, you know, so, you know, what we need to do is change the system, not bitch about the people that we, the people, whether you voted for them or not, are now in office. So if you don't like the system, now is the time to change the friggin' system. So let's go do that, and then stop, you know, we can everybody stop bitching about the fact that it's antiquated and all that other kind of stuff. So, you know,
yeah,
that's
no,
my two cents
on it. I think that's I agree with you. I mean, we have to change it because, you know, it's like it's very convenient to change it when it just didn't go your way. And if it had gone our way, you know, we wouldn't have gone, "Oh, darn, Hillary didn't win the popular vote. So, you know, oh, Donald Trump, come on in. You know, we're going to be magnanimous." I mean, it's not that kind of game. But, you know, I'm a dad, and a lot of the things that are being done kind of scare me. A lot on a lot of levels, from the environment to education to, you know, a lot of the decisions that are being made and people who are being put in place to make them. I'm nervous. I'm very, very nervous, actually. So,
and, you know, generationally, people were very nervous about, you know, we're in a time that we just haven't seen since probably, you know, like the 60s or something like that. But I think every decade at some point has some major thing that goes on with politics or with something, you know, that's going on in society. And that is the big thing. And so this is now our big thing. And for me, it's like, you know, if we're going to be upset about it, well, then don't be just upset. And the thing that gets me, don't be just a name caller, because that just makes you stupid. You got to, if you're going to not like something, okay, let's figure out what you're going to do to move whatever system forward with a solution, so you can not have that same effect next time. But just being a 3-year-old and calling somebody names all the time doesn't make that happen. And so,
yeah, I totally agree with that. The name calling and the, you know, kind of getting into stupid humor and, you know, shaming type stuff,
it was horrible when they did it to you know, I think it, you can like or not like whoever our leaders are today or in the past. And I think it is shameful and completely disrespectful, even if you do not like them, to, you know, call them names or derogatory terms. You know, I may not like, you know, somebody, but I'm not going to say, you know, their hair is the color of the rainbow or something like that.
Right.
You know, it's like, okay, well, I don't like that person's politics, or I don't like that person's things. Okay, who's going to be my candidate the next time? Or how can I make a change in my local community so I can go forward and be impactful where I am at today? But, you know, just saying, well, you're a doo-doo head because I don't like you. Well, that just frustrates me. And we, you know, we can keep going over and over and over. But, you know, what are you going to do on your local level, Rob? What are you going to do?
Right. Well, that's what I'm doing is I'm speaking at Pride because trust
See,
me,
there you go. So that's what you're doing. You know, that's awesome.
Yeah. We're the theme of the local Pride is indivisible. And so it is really a call to action to, because one of the things, and this is kind of to your point, is that, you know, the people who are unhappy right now, unfortunately, it's not like one group that is unhappy in a uniform way. It's like lots of groups that are unhappy in specific ways, and
right,
they're not uniting with the other people who are unhappy in kind of a different way. And what that ends up with is a real divide and conquer kind of place. The other side seems to come together and they're doing things that I think are scary. I think the healthcare thing is scary. You know, it's, but they came together, you know, it's like, and they almost, you know, in the house, they almost didn't come together because they were divided and conquered, and they were conquered. And apparently they changed their mind because they saw where it was going. And, you know, if we don't want that, then we have to do something similar, you know, to pull
right,
it together.
Right.
So indivisible is the theme of the Santa Cruz Pride, and I'm going to be heralding that through a lot of the interviews and the things that we're doing locally. Santa Cruz is kind of a bubble, though, so it does get a little frustrating because we, you know, we are literally the choir singing to the choir a lot of times,
mm-hmm,
and you know, figuring out how to get it a little bit out of here and around in other places where it'll have an impact is important. I think the events that have happened this week are potentially going to blow up. I think we may be in another Watergate situation very quickly.
Fascinating.
Yeah, it's, you know, it, and I'm talking very out of school because I haven't done a lot of research on it, but just the idea that somebody could call up the then director of the FBI and try to get assurances and influence on how an investigation is happening, I am pretty sure that in itself is just illegal. I mean, that's like, you know, kind of in the principle of witness tampering and, you know, coercion. And
there's so much going on that we don't even know about. And,
yeah,
you know, and part of me almost harkens back to, you know, wouldn't it be nice if we didn't know, you know, like back in the day? But, you know, we've unfortunately, there's no going back to back in the day. So that just isn't going to happen. But how we react and deal with the information that we do get, I think, gives us much more responsibility that I think a lot of people are not ready for. And I think that ends up, you know, giving voice to the name calling and things like that, which is unfortunate. But now that we have all of this information that we're getting and we're going, holy cow, now that we have things like social media and Facebook and online radio, you know, blogs and podcasts like what we're doing today, it's interesting to hear what people really think about what's going on and what, you know, what's happening. I just can't believe, you know, in this day and age that, you know, we're calling this a potential Watergate situation again. You know, 11 days in office and then boom. And then this happens and boom. And, you know, what's going to happen in the next year? Do we have, Rob, any glimmer of hope for these next 3.5 years? I'm very curious.
I, you know, to be honest with you, I'm not hugely optimistic because the one juncture of which we can do kind of a reset in theory, but this kind of goes back to what you were saying, is the midterm election. Well, the problem is the Democrats don't have their act together. So, they're not all that popular. In fact, in recent polls, it was like Donald Trump was hugely unpopular. The Republican Congress was really, really, really unpopular. And the Democrats were really, really, really unpopular. So it's like, okay, who's going to fix this? And the midterms also, just the way it's structured, the Democrats are already kind of in a difficult position. So, I'm not really thinking that the midterms are just going to be like a little light switch that flips the other way. So could be 4 years.
You know, everybody's got a lot of work to do on anything. You know, if we're going to have any kind of progress by the midterms, there's a lot to be done. And I think that a lot of folks were really stunned when the events in November took place and the results were what they were, but they didn't have the pulse on what was really going on. And shame on them for that. So what are you going to do now? You know, and so it's like, okay, we got 18 months or really shorter than that, but we've got a year, until those midterms come up. You know, come on, people, if you want to have this real change, you need to get your friggin' act together and make it happen. What are you doing today if you want to be this voice of change? And, you need to start speaking out now. I'm not that person, by the way, so I'm not raising my hand, but you need to get out there and start, that grassroots campaign and start, raising that money. And, because if we're going to have Antonio Sabato Jr., from Melrose Place, be the next senator from California, I think I've just lost my mind.
Yes. No, that's yes. No. Well, I will tell you one thing, and actually kind of goes a little bit full circle. I probably even shouldn't mention this, but what the heck?
You've been an underwear model?
There's a very good chance. There's a very good chance. Thanks to my friend Brody Levesque, who is a top journalist in the country, who is focused primarily on LGBT issues. But Brody knows a lot of people, and there's a very good chance that I'm going to be able to pull in, and you as my co-host are very welcome to join, an interview with Joe Kennedy III. And Joe Kennedy III...
I just be honest with you, Rob, you're a much better interviewer at that type of stuff than I am. Whenever we have a guest on and we've got somebody like that on, I just like to sit back and enjoy listening to your questions because they're insightful, knowledgeable, they're researched before you ask it. You've got follow-up questions prepared. And I'm just like, how do you do your hair today?
Well, I'm going to call him a young man because I think he's slightly younger than me. Well, at this point, a lot of people are, but, he is the grandson of RFK, Robert Kennedy. And he has been there have been lots of little snippets. He's a congressman right now from Massachusetts in the House of Representatives. Obviously, he's on the side of the aisle that doesn't get much power because Republicans have control. But he has given some super in speeches. I really think he's a superstar. I think because of his legacy and his point of view, and he's an inspiring leader. I really think that he's going to be the next President Kennedy, not in the nearest of futures, but eventually. But we're going to have him on. And,
cool.
And
well, yeah, so I will tune in. I will be there.
Yeah, I'm super excited about that because it's like somebody I've had my eye on, and I was already kind of fandoming from afar, and then Brody kind of helped piece that together as a possibility, and I'm like going, okay, Brody, which one of my sons do you want? Shipping them off to you right away. You pick. Boom, you get them. Okay, I'm not that bad. But
was that a reward or a punishment?
Hey, my kids are great.
I know your kids are great, but I didn't know. It's like, okay, you're going to get my kids, and he's like, oh no, I'll get them on the show. Or you're going to get my kids. Great. I'll get them on the show.
That is kind of going back to that old saying about, I'll give you my firstborn,
Gotcha. Okay. Well, I was hoping that was the case.
Yeah. So, he may actually kind of go, okay, they're teenagers. This isn't quite the same whimsy of handing off your firstborn, but whatever. So we got that. And Michael from the That 70s Show, we're in talks to have him come back on. So
cool.
I think he's got some new projects, but I've got to get on the ball and get him back on here. So we've got some stuff coming up.
I'm a big fan of listening to you interview folks. And so, it's rare that I have a Thursday night off. So, I'm grateful to be here on the show tonight. But whether I'm listening to Out in Santa Cruz or the excellent job you do, the majority of the time here on Rated LGBT Radio, listen to the rebroadcast or, on demand. And also, by the way, this is still available on Apple's iTunes. You can get it as a podcast for Rated G Radio. That's the parent company. Right. You can go and get that and download all the Rated LGBT episodes and listen to Rob all the time. I do it, but it's a fun way to spend an hour and really become informed and educated in a fun way about what's going on. So I will always appreciate all that you do.
Well, thank you. And likewise, I love your stuff and quite frankly, when you're on here with me, this is a breeze, not just a breeze. It's fun. It's exactly what you're saying. I mean, I only bring part of the fun. You bring the other part. I may bring the FU and you bring the N. There you go. For a little pun intended.
Yeah. We've got 9 minutes left, Rob. What else is going on in the world that we want to talk about today?
Well, there have been some kind of good artistic things. I don't know if you've watched Feud, the Ryan Murphy series that was.
I haven't seen it because I don't have TV, but I'll, when it comes onto like Netflix, I can watch it on my computer. So I'm very excited because I've heard great things about it.
It is wonderful. And I bought it. I also did not have the right TV channel, whatever that they showed it on. So I already bought it through iTunes. So I can watch it on my phone and watch it on through Apple. But oh my gosh, it is, it's a story. I mean, you can kind of piece together the story if you, go out and watch old YouTubes of, Bette Davis and Joan Crawford, but it's fascinating as a gay man because, you may have an opinion on this, but it seems like strong women have always been held up as kind of icons for gay men. And I think it has something to do with women that have fighters against misogyny, those of us who are fighting against homophobia, we relate to the oppression and the strength and all that. But it was a fascinating series. And Jessica Lange is wonderful, definitely award worthy, and I'm sure we will be seeing Emmys flying her way. Susan Sarandon was also very, very good, but the Joan Crawford character was given much more depth. I don't know if you remember the movie Mommy Dearest.
I've never seen it.
Well, you may get your gay card revoked. I'm your friend.
There's a long list of things that would revoke that card, but I have not seen it. I'm sorry. And I did read the book by Rutanya Alda, though, who wrote about playing Joan Crawford or playing Christina in the movie Mommy Dearest with everybody, and that was fascinating. And she's been a guest on the show, and I've met her in person. She's a quite lovely lady, so maybe that's almost a redeeming quality for me not to lose the card quite yet.
You got kind of the ace in the hole there. That's actually pretty really cool. She did a great job in that movie, playing the Christina part. Faye Dunaway turned Joan Crawford into Faye Dunaway kind of weaves through this story, ironically, because and I'm not giving too much away, but she played Joan Crawford in that movie, and she made her characterization of Joan Crawford made Joan Crawford kind of a character.
Right.
It's like she turned her into this two-dimensional look. And, that was inspired by the book somewhat, but the film portrayal was camp and pushed it even further in that direction. So you had Faye Dunaway kind of, you know, responsible for turning Joan Crawford into this two-dimensional person or image. And then the Feud series, Jessica Lange really goes deep and brings out much more depth of who Joan Crawford is and her vulnerabilities. And, you know, she doesn't refute the things of Mommy Dearest, but you get a much better sense of why it all happened and how that could have come down. But the real irony part is you have this feud with Bette Davis and Joan Crawford, who are pitted against each other and kind of made to feud. And then it turns out that the person that Bette Davis, the real Bette Davis in real life, encountered on a film that made her actually appreciate the professionalism of Joan Crawford and get beyond kind of the sense of the feud that had been inspired was, wait for it, Faye Dunaway.
Of course. And I don't know anything about that story, so this is all news to me.
Yeah. So it's because Bette Davis, after, you know, the whole thing with Joan Crawford had, you know, blown up and, you know, was kind of petering out or whatever, she did a movie where Faye Dunaway was the lead actress and Bette Davis played her mother. It was a, I think it might have been a TV movie. It was about Amy Semple McPherson. And apparently,
you got me.
Yeah, Faye Dunaway was such a diva and never on time and so unprofessional and everything else that it, at least in the as depicted in the series here, she was like, oh my God, I didn't know what I had with Joan Crawford. She is such a professional by comparison. So it made her appreciate old Joan. So
there you go.
Little ironies here and there.
Joan wasn't a bad old broad after all.
No, she was pretty fascinating. I mean, they were both, I definitely recommend that to anybody listening or, you know, it is really a fascinating series. And especially if you like old Hollywood, it really,
I love old Hollywood. I think there's just it was such a interesting time for actors, you know, for how they were manipulated and controlled and shaped and formed, but it created the system that we have now.
Yeah. So I agree. And this gives it just, you know, a little color to it and honors it and lets you really see what, where it all came from. So it was fascinating. So
cool.
Yeah.
Tell us again what's happening this Saturday night on Out in Santa Cruz on KSCO 1080 AM or outinsantacruz.com.
Out in Santa Cruz, we are running a repeat. But,
I love, but that's like a good time to re-catch something you might have missed.
Is. But it's author Jason LeClerc, who wrote a book called Black Kettle. It is a fascinating interview, and I know it's fascinating because we already did it. So that will be played. And the reason it is being played is Bash and I will be attending the Queer Youth Leadership Awards here in Santa Cruz. We will be doing interviews there. I will be lining up people to come on stage with me during Pride, to do the Pride on stage. And so we're out and about and two places at once. So it's going to be fun.
Good job. Right on.
So I'm so thrilled that you made it on here, especially since our dear guest, Eric Ryan, and, you know, you guys need to check out his work, but you know, he wasn't able to be here, obviously. So
maybe another time, as they say.
So anyway,
we know what that means. Okay.
So stay tuned for next week. We will be back with Rated LGBT Radio and maybe get Gary Miller back on again. We'll see.
I'm going to cross my fingers. If I can, I will. Have a great night, everybody. Thanks for being here tonight with us. I love you all. Have a great night.
Yes. Have a great night.